For monumental savings, pick Papec Honda. Shop our incredible selection with over 1,100 new Hondas available. Pick a new 2020 Accord Sedan LX CVT. Lease for just $249 a month. 36 months, zero security deposit. Pick Papec Honda today. Visit us at 11151 US 49 in Gulfport or shop online anytime at papechonda.com. Stock number LA052085-1, 12,000 miles per year. $2,099 down payment, tax and fees extra. Unapproved credit through HFS. See dealer for details. Ends 3220. Pick Papec Nissan for your next vehicle. Shop over 500 new Nissans at the only Nissan dealer in Gulfport. Right now, buy a new 2020 Rogue S for $24,074. Visit us on US 49 in Gulfport and drive home your new Nissan today. Shop our complete inventory online at PapecNissan.com. VIN LC724100, MSRP 28,180. Includes 1606 dealer discount and 2,500 Nissan customer cash. Tax, tax, title, and fees extra. See dealer for details. Ends 3220.
I'm your host, Joe Montaldo. I hope everyone's having a great morning, great evening, great afternoon. Saul would relate because Joe got the times confused. It's my show, and somehow or another, I managed to confuse the time. I don't know what the hell I was thinking today. I have Farrah Yadoz on with us tonight. And Farrah is a good friend of mine. We go way back. Her and I have had many, many, many conversations. Right now, she's in a whole nother continent. So it's going to be interesting. So far, the audio has been good, so I don't think it's going to be a problem, but I'm going to bring her on in just a second. Guys, I'm going to bring her back on in a couple of weeks because, like I said, I messed up the time tonight somehow or another. I was supposed to be starting at 6 and I started at 7, which is the old show time. The new show time 6 to 8 because we have the Outer Realm followers now with Michelle and Amelia. They do a great job. I think their guest tonight is Jeff Mudgett, so he'll be on. But anyway, I just want to apologize to Farrah and to the listening audience because apparently I'm an idiot. But anyway, Farrah, how have you been? It's been so long since I had a chance to talk to you. And, you know, I haven't been doing guests for the last, like, 18 months because I've been just buried in research. But now I'm done with the research, so I'm back doing guests again, which kind of feels a little weird to me. I got to be honest. When you take off, like, 18 months – I mean, I was not doing radio. I just weren't doing – I wasn't doing guests. And I was just doing regular radio and putting out just, you know, research project after research project. I got, for some reason, about 5 or 6 years ago, I got back into this blood type study full string, and then these other new projects, and the gray and the reptilian and human, and man, it just took my life over. But it's not uncommon for us ufologists to get wrapped up into a particular thing. Now, Farrah's over in Turkey, guys, which is a beautiful country. It's steeped in all kind of history. And when I say this, it's not just history, because the area itself is just full of history. I mean, it's part of the cradle of civilization. But like I was telling her at the beginning of the show, there seems to be a lot of contactees and abductees that come out of the area, and which we're going to get into later in the show. But Farrah, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, what you've been up to, and we'll get started from there.
Yeah, sure. It is so nice to hear your voice again. So the last time, I guess we were together on a conference in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Almost, oh, yeah, I forgot about that conference. I know.
It was Pat Montaldo, I guess. What was his name? Pat something. I can't remember.
Yeah, Pat. I can't remember his last name. But he's a real nice guy. I had a good time there, too.
We were together on a conference. Anyway, so as you know, I lived in New Jersey for 10 years. And I was working in New York City. So I moved back to my native country, Turkey, Istanbul, in 2010. So since then, I have been busy in this field in Turkey because, as you know, there's lots of activity about UFOs, about alien abductions, and about ancient history related to extraterrestrial races. So the biggest thing in Turkey right now is the discovery of Göbekli Tepe structures. Göbekli Tepe is an ancient area located in southeastern of Turkey, and it is very close to Syrian border. Actually, the area is very close to Edessa. In the Bible, it is called Edessa, where the Abraham lived.
Mm-hmm.
And now why it is important? Because the discovery of Göbekli Tepe structures has changed this history. They are older than the pyramids. They are older than the Stonehenge. And Göbekli Tepe goes back to 12,000 years ago. It was structured, it was built by an unknown group of people who lived in the pre-pottery Neolithic time. But as you can see, they were a very advanced civilization. They were a very advanced group of people in architecture, in mathematics, in astronomy. And also, archaeologists or the historians called that place the first temple of the human race, the first religious temple of the human race. But I think that's not very accurate, because there wasn't a religion then. So how can be a temple? So Göbekli Tepe was not a temple. It was something else. I have been going there almost 3 or 4 times in a year, and we are organizing research tours, and it has been very interesting. There is a lot of information which helps us in order to understand the early extraterrestrial visitations to the Earth.
You know, I was thinking, right, I was going to rephrase that, and I forgot how I was going to say it. When you, because the whole area to me, I mean, first off, like we were talking about a little while ago, I mean, the history there is unbelievable, how far history goes back and how many cultures or civilizations have actually been there. I mean, I know we all use the modern names today because that's what we all grew up with. But I mean, really and truly, when you get up there, there's so many countries, you know, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, all of them are around there. And for some reason, Turkey always seems to come up more often in this. And I often wonder, because Turkey's kind of like a, I don't want to call it a bridge to Europe, but it's kind of in the area.
It is between, it is a bridge geographically and culturally and historically. It is a bridge between two continents. We are between Asia and Europe.
And see, and for that reason, I think there was just a lot of stuff that either happened there or was put there or stationed there or developed there. I mean, I hate to say any one, because I'm sure it's a multitude of different things. And I always hear, you know, I'll catch, you know, a late TV show or something, and they'll be talking about the area and just stuff in general they find, you know, different ruins. And thank God Turkey's got a solid enough government that they didn't lose all their monuments and ruins in this last ignorant war that was going on out there. I mean, there's so much culture was lost that I hate to even think about that. It always flashes me back to when they burned the Library of Alexandria. I mean, so many things get lost. And, you know, it's not hurting you and I so much as it's going to hurt the children that come 30, 40, 50 years from now, because they're not going to know about it. They're just not even going to know it. If they're not taught in school, they're just not going to know any of this existed. And I hate to lose any of that. And I get so many reports from the old days in Turkey and Egypt. For some reason, I get a lot of reports of different type of extraterrestrials. And you know, it's funny too. Just the other day, I seen, I don't know where this was, they were showing this temple, and in the very front of the temple, there was two of these great, gorgeous pillars standing there, and they rolled and wrapped around. And right as they rolled at the top, now it could just because they're old, but both faces look like grays. I mean, when you looked at them, it kind of made you step back like, nah, it just must be an old picture. And but when it comes to the Middle East, I never rule out anything because it seems to be that there's just a lot there. Now, we don't get as many reports like in places like Iran and Iraq like we used to. For some reason, I don't know if it's the governments or if everything's been torn down.
Yeah, the political problems, of course.
Yeah.
The
government, so you don't get much information out of there. But Turkey is a strong ally to NATO and all, and there's a lot of Americans that travel back and forth from there. Not just Americans, a lot of Europeans that travel back and forth from there. And there's a lot of people like yourself that are studying these different things, trying to figure out what they were. Because in the old days, you know, if we were alive 2,000, 3,000 years ago, we'd have thought these were some kind of deities or demons. We wouldn't have really known what they were. But we'd have still been writing about them and talking about them and designing our culture around them. And you see that a lot there. Now, what do you mean, Martha? Is that where the gin started? I have no idea where the gin started. That was a left field question. I just wasn't expecting. I really, I don't know where the gin started.
Okay,
maybe
actually, jins,
gins,
demons, jins.
yeah.
So they, according to religious belief system, and according to pagan belief system, they existed before the human race. So they are a kind of interdimensional beings. They don't have the physical body as we know, and they are made from the smokeless energy. They are made from a kind of electricity. They are made from an energy. And as you know, in Bible, in Holy Quran, there is a lot of information about the jinns. So even the Jesus Christ was trying to heal the people. He was healing the people who were under the control of the jinns. And also Saint Paul in Ephesus, in the ancient city of Ephesus, in the ancient city of Pergamon, they became the seven churches. They are located in Turkey. There was that jinn demon problems, and there were many people who were possessed by them. And Jesus Christ and Saint Paul was healing the people who were possessed by the jinns. So we are very familiar with this kind of information in Turkey. And there is one more thing. The typical alien abduction symptoms in the past, in 19th century, they existed in Turkey, but they didn't know the extraterrestrials. They were talking about the jinns who were coming in the night to the bedrooms of the little children, and they were taking the little children to somewhere. And then in the same night or the next morning, the jinns were bringing the little children back to their bedrooms. So this is a fact, a historical fact that accepted by the Turkish families. And it was a very normal part of the culture. It wasn't a scary thing. It was normal. But later in 20th century, with the start of the UFO reports, UFO cases, the name of the jinns has changed into the extraterrestrials. And there is another thing which is somewhat new that I want to share with you.
Oh, please.
Yeah, so this is not something new, but I started to collect information from the Turkish abductees and contactees in the last 5, 6 months. So we know that probably in the last 60 years, in the last 70 years, most of the abductees came back with a brown color substance on their hands, on their body, on their skin, and sometimes on their feet. So again in the past, again in the 19th century, or maybe 100 years ago, when people didn't know about the extraterrestrials, they said that yes, jinns take the people, take them to somewhere, take them from their rooms, and when they come back, jinns leave a sign, a seal on the body of the abductees. That's very important. Now we see the same thing in the modern time abductions. Some of the abductees come back with a seal, with a sign on their body left by the extraterrestrials. In our country, the same thing has been happening, but the name was different. People believed that jinns were leaving the traces. Now, in 2020, probably I get 60 or 70 emails in a month and photographs from the abductees. They show me, they take photographs of the brown color substance on their hands, on their body, and on their feet. Some of them went to dermatologists thinking that this is maybe an allergic reaction. And of course, after the laboratory analysis, it is not a fungus. It is not an allergic reaction. There is no rash. There is no itchy feeling. It is just a brown color something without smell. It happens just after the abduction and depend on the people's skin type. The brown color thing stays a few days and after that it goes away by itself, but you cannot wash it off. You cannot clean it with the soap. Even some of the experiencers tried to wash it off with detergent, with the laundry detergent, and it didn't work. So I wonder if you have something similar in the United States or in the other parts of the world in abduction field.
You know, since we're talking about this, I'm gonna put out a thing around the planet to see if this is happening, because it does happen in the United States. It's a little different color, so I'm kind of wondering if the color makes a difference where you are in the world or what country you're in. I'm just speculating here because I'm not sure. But we have had this, and it's like a blue or purple. When it was analyzed, some of it there was definitely some type of dye in it, but then there was other things in there. That wasn't and scientists, actually the doctor I talked to, said he wanted to have this analyzed. He wanted to see if there was any radioisotopes in it, because he noticed that some of the chemicals or just wasn't showing up on a periodic table. He said, I don't know what. He said maybe it was contaminated and it's not reading right, he said. But obviously, he said, whatever the substance is, because it doesn't come off, it does have to fade off on its own. And it can take anywhere from 2 to 5 days for it to disappear. But It doesn't leave any rash. It doesn't seem to be harming anybody. The substance itself doesn't seem to be poisonous to man, but it's not telling us what it's being used for. Sometimes I think it's a marker, you know, every 10th contactee they give it to or something, but that's just speculation because I really don't know. But now that I hear this in another part of the world, because I really hadn't thought about it. See, that's why I love doing these interviews, because it makes me think about stuff I don't. But now that you said this, that it's going on in Turkey, I'm going to go ahead. I got some friends out in Asia and some directors. I'm going to hit them up. I'm going to hit some of the people up in Europe. I'm going to hit some of the people in South America and Australia and see if they've got similar. Because I've heard about stains before, but this is seeming to be something significant that we're missing out on. It means something. So we need to figure out what does it mean.
It means something very important. Very
it does.
Important.
Because, you know, I don't know how many contactees this is happening to. Right now, I'd say 1 in 5, but I don't even know if that's correct. It could be more. It could be less. I know I've got about 275 cases with this on them. Now, you know what's interesting now? I did get three Canadian cases where they said they were getting this substance that wouldn't wash off, but it was like brilliant green. She said it was emerald green is what she called it. She said it was this really bright green. So I'm beginning to wonder, is this a reaction to a blood type? Is this a reaction to an area or a skin type? You know, I'm kind of wondering. So I'm going to make a couple of notes when I get off the air with you tonight, and I'm going to see what I can dig up. For the next time that you and I talk, maybe I'll have some more information on this, and it might be a little bit clearer. You know, it's interesting. I got a meeting coming up with a group of contactees in Russia. It's about 25 of them in 2 weeks. So I'm going
to
go ahead and send
them.
I got. So I'm going to find out if they're having this too.
Really?
So I'm going to put out, because, you know, we deal with a lot of countries now, and I got a lot of contact. I've been doing this for almost 40 years now. I shouldn't even said that aloud. But I've made a lot of contacts over the years, and the organization's well spread out. So I'm going to ask around, you know, because we had, you know, I was talking to, I can't pronounce his damn last name, but he's out of Cairo. He works at the Cairo Museum, actually. Mm-hmm. And we hooked up about, like 12, 14 years ago. I'd actually written to them for something. I was looking for some hieroglyphs, if he had some pictures of the original hieroglyphs. I was trying to make sure they weren't fake. You know, the ones where you see like the gray standing in a hieroglyph or an airplane or something. I wanted to make sure they weren't fake, that somebody hadn't faked them. So I met this guy and we talked, and I couldn't speak any Egyptian. He couldn't speak any English. So it was just hilariously funny to try to communicate.
Yeah.
But now, you know, he speaks pretty good English. And of course, we have translators now that help a lot too. So, but he had mentioned to me something about a reddish brown substance being found on a group of contactees. Now, what's odd about this is, originally when he found them, this was in a tomb he found. These two people were dead. But in the tomb itself, he thought that they had been abducted. There was something about the layout of the tomb and something about the hieroglyphs on the tomb that made him think that this was an abduction case. He don't think the aliens killed them. He thinks it just, but on their skin, they had this reddish brown substance that hadn't gone away. And they did analyze it, and I guess it was too old. They couldn't get anything out of it, but it got him to thinking. So he had been talking with a local group we have out of Egypt, which is, I don't know, two dozen people, maybe three. And he had said that five of them had reported having this substance on them that would not wash away, and it just would stay. But no one ever had it analyzed. So, you know, and he hasn't said anything since then. So I'm going to write to him, too, when we get off tonight. Okay. And talk to him. And
in two cases in Turkey, in Istanbul, actually, two ladies, they had several cases with the brown color thing. And just after that, they claimed that their specific health problems were cured in a miraculous way. And even their doctors were in shock because they couldn't expect such a surprise in their health situation, in their health condition.
You know, now that I hear a lot of that, that people will come back with, you know, like stage four cancer or this, that, or the other thing and be healed. And not just being healed, but there's no remnants of the disease that they were sick from. Yeah. It's like whatever it is gone. It's, you know, it just doesn't seem to be there anymore. So maybe that's what this is. Maybe maybe that's what it is. Maybe they're marking people who need health adjustments. Here we go again. Before anybody writes, Sefer and I, we're just speculating at the moment. People, don't get crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that could be it. I mean, it could be that they came in and identified them with some kind of health issue and marked them to have it fixed. Because we do have a lot of contactees who will tell you they had this, that, or the other thing wrong with them. Sometimes it's major. Sometimes it's minor. But they'll tell you that it's just gone.
Yeah.
Or it's healed, so, or their back feels better, or whatever it is.
I wish you could come to visit us sometime soon and to meet them in person. I can also provide you the photographs. And, of course, I don't reveal their identity because they want to keep it secret.
Well, yeah, I don't blame them for that.
Their names or their faces. So I'm only interested in their hands so far.
Well, you know, and it's good to keep them safe because you never know. You know, right now the governments act like they don't have an interest in this, which I don't believe because I get weird phone calls from people all the time. But so I know they keep it interested. So I try for the most part to keep as many people out of the limelight and out of the face of the government because I learned back with Katarina Wilson, God, like 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
When you come out public, you're risking being military abducted. And no matter where you are in the world, they seem to be able to do it anywhere. Now, I've got cases of military abductions. I got in all over Turkey. I got them all over the Middle East, for that matter. It's weird, too. I've talked about this on air before. Like, in Europe, the military abductions seem to be done by gentils, French-speaking people, you know, like policemen. Mm. And in the United States and Canada and South America, it seems to be Americans. But in the Middle East, it's not. I don't know what you would call them because I don't know enough about the cultures there, but I've heard people describe this name before. I'm gonna have to find out what it was, but they're like it might be from Turkey too because they're talking about a very elite military group that aren't actually military. They come from the military, but I don't think they're actually military anymore. I think they're like leftover politicians, leftover military people who are in high positions that are now in a different kind of position. Not affiliated directly with the governments, but they seem to be doing these military abductions all over the Middle East. And we actually stumbled across it by accident during the last the Iraq war, the first Iraq war, Desert Storm. We had some military people who were abductees report being taken by some group He said they were definitely from the Middle East. You could tell by the accents. He said, but he didn't know enough about the accents to know what part of the Middle East. And he said, and a couple of times, it sounded like it might have been people from different countries. He said they spoke really good English, which surprised him because they had heavy accents. But he said, yeah, they had been taken, and we had several reports of these people. So as far as we can tell, it wasn't Americans that were taking them. It was somebody from the region. And it looks like whatever group this is that's doing these military abductions, because I don't think it's based out of one country anymore, they must pick and choose from different parts of governments and military and use those people just for this. Now, I couldn't tell you what happens to those people or where they go, but it does seem that that's what they're doing. And it made sense to me, too, that, you know, if you're going to be taking people in the Middle East, you might want someone of the same skin color or the same accents to make you feel a little bit more secure when you're on board the ship or on board or wherever they bring you for these abductions. Because most of the time, these are in some kind of building somewhere. They usually bring you into a building or something. And that's like, what's her name? Alexia, I'm saying it wrong. She actually she used to live in Istanbul. And,
oh, really?
She said that, well, her first conscious abduction that she can remember happened in Istanbul. On the regression, she goes back to when she was a child, but the first one she remembers actually happened in Istanbul. And she said she was traveling, what was the name? It started with an A. It was a city. It's a fairly decent sized city, too. But she said she was leaving and traveling to Istanbul. And right as she got to the city limits, she remembered being taken. And then she remembered being taken several times after that. But she went public on I guess on some radio show, and she got military abducted. And when she did, she said whoever it was, she would have bet money came from Turkey. She said they had the same accent as she did. She said they basically had the same skin color as she did, which I don't know what the hell she meant by that, because I consider her to be a white girl. I guess she's a tan girl, but it doesn't really matter. She said that, you know, she had the distinct feeling whoever she was dealing with was local. And they took her to a building. She said the best part about it is she recognized the building from outside. She must have passed by it before. But when she went inside, so she stopped at that building and went inside of it. It's a old, she says, an old building, too. It's been there a long time. And she didn't recognize anything in the building. It was like when they took her and she went in the door with them, the inside was like more modern and had all kind of equipment and stages and all kind of stuff. And of course, when she went in the daytime, when she found the building and went and looked at it, it was just a historic building. So she was really confused. You know, she's like, well, I don't understand. She said, obviously, this was the building I seen. She said, and I said, well, maybe there's a portal, maybe there's a gateway, maybe there's a door that leads to another part of the building. I said, you know, they're not going to let you see that in the daytime for sure. I mean, they don't want no tourists or, you know, locals walking into this place. So I'm sure they're hiding it. But she was shaken by it. And of course, she didn't want to speak anymore after that because, of course, she got MILAB, which I don't blame her. You know, I mean, when you come public, sometimes you risk, wherever you are in the world, getting MILAB. Now, you know, in Russia and China, it seems to work a little different, but it still seems to be going on there. And the Russian government and the Chinese government don't seem to be able to stop it anymore than the U.S. government does. It's almost like they know what's going on and they just leave it alone. Whoever this group is powerful.
Yeah, another powerful thing that I would like to mention is now in Turkey, we have a new generation of hybrids. They are between 20 to 28 years old around that group, and maybe a little bit younger. And they are coming from abductee families, and we are very sure that they are hybrids because they are different than the regular people.
It's possible. You know, one of the things we learned, one of the reasons we started all this blood type and DNA studies, so we could track family lines from, you know, we have cases that are six generations now. What's interesting about this is, Farah, so if I go talk to the great-great-great-grandmother, she'll tell me stuff about what her great-grandmother said three generations earlier, so that's nine generations. And each one of these women, or each one of these men, because sometimes it's men, or both, Like their telepathic abilities seem to get a little better each generation. Their understanding seems to get a little better each generation. Their educational level seems to go up, even though they haven't taken that in school or, you know, applied themselves for like a bachelor's or something. It just seems to, their education seems to go far beyond what their physical education was, which is strange to start off with. And we were thinking hybrids. And in a way, they are hybrids, because what it is, the original family lines, whenever it was 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, whenever they originally were taken, how many of thousands of years ago, they've been abducted in those family lines since. So about 20 years ago, I had put out a project about, I found it interesting because, you know, Greys have their contactees, reptilians have their contactees, humans have their contactees. But we learned was, like a Grey contactee might marry a reptilian contactee and they may have children. May marry into a human contactee and have children. And that child may marry back into the Grey contactees and have another children. Well, those children are highlighted. They're beyond their parents. They're beyond us. They're moving forward. They're usually smarter, faster, brighter. They're usually either telepathic or empathic or both. You know, and hybrid's a good word for them. I don't know, because I think all abductees and contactees are actually hybrids because of the original mixing of the DNA. But since then, all three of these DNAs, including whatever our original DNA, has been remixing with each other. So they're coming up with like new hybrids, and that's what's going on. Each generation are born from these previous generation who might be gray human, gray or reptilian or whatever, and they're having kids, and those kids are containing. Mm-hmm. Now these kids have got all four DNAs. They got our original DNA and these three aliens' DNA. So I think that's one of the other reasons why they keep such a good eye on us. Because these children, let me rephrase this, these children's great-great-great-great-grandchildren will probably be extremely advanced. They'll probably be full telepath and full empath, whereas these children are still developing those abilities, but they're really good. And you'll notice in this young high-grade group that they're really good about don't know who's on the phone, don't know who's knocking at the door. They'll just know a lot of things. It's almost like they're pulling it out the sky. You know that's not what they're doing, but it feels like that. You know, they have information they shouldn't have. They know a lot of stuff that's going on that they shouldn't know that's going on, and they seem to be smarter, brighter, and faster. Even though some of them have issues, I think sometimes it's a little much for some of them. I know some of them develop like drinking or drug problems or other types. Yeah. You know, and I know why. I mean, they're just trying to hide from whatever it is that's a scary thing to think that you might be being taken by aliens and that your DNA has been messed with and your family's DNA has been messed with. And so you don't really, you know, you say you're a human, but are you really a human? You don't know that. I mean, all you know is you started out as a human, and since then you've had other DNAs introduced into yours. It's one of the reasons we think the blood types existed the way they did. Because most people don't realize this, but until 35,000 years ago, there was no Rh negative on the planet. There was no green eyes, no blue eyes, no red hair, no blonde hair, and no Rh negative. All there was brown-haired, dark-haired, dark-eyed people. That was it. Lots of different skin colors, but as far as that was all there was. They were all Rh positive, and they all shared a common gene with the rhesus monkey. And then 30,000 years ago, out of the blue, for no reason, Rh negative emerged on the scene. And these people are different. Rh negative people are different than Rh. They have different emotions. They have different attitudes. All of them seem to be empathic or telepathic to an extent. They're just a different kind of person. They also have green and blue eyes, different color hairs. These are all mutations that just came out of the blue. It seems like one of the alien races introduced this into our society. Maybe because we needed it. Maybe we needed an infusion into our genes. Maybe this was a boost for the population. But I find it interesting because the majority of contactees, 60-65%, are Rh negative or blue or green eye. Both, actually. So it's kind of strange that, you know, Rh negative only makes up 15% of the world's population. But amongst abductees and contactees, it's a much higher ratio. It's almost like the aliens were doing this on purpose. Or something in that Rh negative needed to be introduced to the rest of our society to survive. I don't know what. There's a lot of speculation.
Do you think about the blood type ORRH positive? O positive.
O positive is strange because you know, you got O positive that started on the world. Like I said, 85% of the world has O positive blood. Oh, well, not O positive, but positive blood. What's interesting about O positive and O negative is that 95% of South America and Central America are O blood. It's the only place in the world you see that. Everywhere else it's mixed, like 30%, 15%, 35%, 33%. But in South America and Central America, it actually makes up like 95% of the population. So there's something significant
about that. Native Indians or North America, Native Indians or North America, what about them?
You find a lot of them that carry these genes. And that's another thing. They show up in clusters in the United States. Like where the Cherokee and there's three native tribes there. Well, it's heavy Rh negative for some reason. But if you go out west and up, if you go out west to northwest, you'll find that most of the Indian tribes out there are O positive. Now, what it means, I have no idea, but it's there. And then somebody, and we can't maybe verify this, but, you know, a lot of people talk about the black-eyed people and the black-eyed children as being demons and ghosts, which they may be. But we found out through the contactees that we deal with that there is a black-eyed race that's almost identical to us, except they got these weird black eyes, and they're abductees too. They're being taken just like we are. And see, we're allowed to interact with the keepers are allowed to interact with abductees and contactees here on Earth and aboard the ship. We'll come to find out they're also allowed to deal with other races that are on the same evolution level we are that are also being abducted by the aliens. See, until recently, I didn't even know they were abducting anybody but us. But now we've got such a large group of contactees that we now know that there's other races being taken as well. And they're on board these same ships that we're being taken to. And we're allowed to interact with them, I guess, because technologically or sociologically, we're somewhere along the same development. So we're not gaining anything or giving anything up by hanging out with them. It's very interesting because there are a lot like us, except for they get these weird black eyes. And their heads are a little designed, but basically they're humans. You know, I don't know if they got different kind of blood than we do or anything like that, but they look a lot like us. I mean, they got hands and feet and noses and eyes and mouths and heads. And I mean, they just look like us, except they got these weird, you know, little round black eyes. And those black eyes are black on black. You can't see any pupil in there, even though I'm sure there is one.
Oh, yeah, of course, definitely. Like the ancient punishing gods.
Yes.
As you know, the Anunnaki race, actually, originally, first landed to Phoenicia, which means today's Israel and Palestine, that area, Lebanon, Israel and Palestine, eastern Mediterranean countries, east of Mediterranean Sea. So the first Anunnaki gods had complete black eyes, full black eyes, without any white part. And it is also in their sculptures. It is also in the ancient art pieces. So you can clearly see that ancient gods had completely different eyes than the human race.
And this might be the progenitors of the race we were just talking about, the black-eyed children or black-eyed people.
Yeah.
They may be the original, you know, like the Greys or reptilians might be our progenitors. They might be theirs. And since these races are both being taken, it's a good chance that the progenitors would have known each other or been involved. The only thing I'm not sure about when it comes to the black eyed, if they're in another world or in another dimension, I'm not sure. You know, sometimes it sounds like, because they're on board the ships with us, it sounds like they're from this dimension. But sometimes it sounds like they're from an alternate Earth. You know, a Earth that's sitting on top of us. But there's no way to prove it is what the problem is.
Like a parallel dimension.
Yeah, like a parallel dimension. Like, you know, because there's multiple dimensions. A lot of people think that's why it is. He said, so a lot of people describe them like coming out the walls or walking through this, walking through that. But we also know the aliens' technology allows you to pass through walls. So it's hard to say if it's them, if it's a technology, you know, without being able to spend more time with them. And one of the things we've been asking contactees now, if they consciously wake up aboard a ship and they see these people while they're there for a few days, to interact with them to find out what you can. Because on the hypnosis, a lot of time we can retrieve that information and at least get an idea of what these guys actually are. But for the most part, they just seem to be a race kind of like us, going through the same paces we are and asking the same questions. Why the hell are we being taken? What are you doing this for? Why are you taking them? But just like our contactees, you know, once a contactee reaches the contactee stage, they kind of lose the fear of the abductions. It doesn't have that same stigma. And I'm not saying for all of them, but for a lot of them, it doesn't have that same stigma. And it seems to be the same for them, but it's hard to say. And then, you know, this could be a race that's running parallel to us, just trying to see, you know, trying to keep pace with what we're doing, or we're trying to keep pace with what they're doing. But I would bet you, because when you talked about the Anunnaki, I was thinking, you know, they could be the progenitors of that particular species. Or the start of that species. I mean, something started us out, and it seems like we got a head start, because if you look at everything else on this planet, it took millions and millions of years. It took man 2 million years. We went from ape to going to the moon in less than 2 million years. Ain't nothing else on the planet did that. So at least nothing we know about, huh? Yeah, I'm not going to say 100%, but it does seem to be that way. And the black-eyed people, especially coming out of the Middle East, always have fascinated me. I just wish, and I had said this at an election not long ago, I said, I wish we could figure out a way to stabilize the Middle East, because not just for the knowledge of history that the planet's missing out on, but for you and I guarantee you the Middle East is a trove of where abduction started. I don't know if it was the original spot, but I guarantee you it's in the top five original spots. Which means buried in monuments, hidden in sand, cities that are disappeared. There's probably evidence. And since it was such a, you know, the Middle East is so steeped in religion, you know, all three of the major religions came from there. You know, the Muslims, the Christians, and the Jews.
Yeah.
So when you think about that, you know, and you think about, you know, Muhammad or Jesus or any of the prophets or gods, any of these could have been aliens. You know, we're assuming they were the children of God.
Or they were contacted by the elites.
Yeah, so I mean, it's hard to say, but I guarantee you there is a wealth of information there that we're until we can stabilize the area, and you know, until my country decides to get out of there, the area is never going to stabilize. well, it's true. I mean, somebody said, well, leave everybody on their own. Well, I can understand we just don't want to turn the Middle East over to a bunch of crazy people, but, you know, America needs to find a different role. Besides blowing the shit out of everything, excuse my language. Well, because, you know, regardless what happened, whether we destroyed it or the whoever destroyed it, I mean, a lot of monuments have been lost. A lot of history has been lost. Stuff that we're not going to be able to recover. And, you know, you never know what's written in them temples, or if there's hieroglyphs or pictures.
Probably
or drawings.
The real history of human race. The real history of human race. The real history of the ancient alien races. That's only
because
human race.
Technically the Middle East is the cradle of civilization. Everybody always wants to say Africa. Africa might have been the start of the civilization, but the Middle East is a cradle, and you can look at that. If you look at the development of the Middle East even 1,000 years ago, it was well ahead of Europe or anybody else. You know, Europe took a while to catch up with the Middle East with their, you know, you can actually say the Romans technically, you know, copied a lot of the great cities in the Middle East. You know, and you got a lot of ancient cities, Istanbul, Baghdad. These are all ancient cities. They've been there for a long time. God knows what we're losing there. You know, and I'm curious.
Not only Istanbul. And again, I want to mention Göbekli Tepe, and I want to mention Harran, which is Edessa in the Bible. So actually, many things started there.
Yeah.
And especially, we have to pay attention to ancient alchemistry, because I think alchemistry started in Göbekli Tepe. And another thing, Göbekli Tepe was an experimental laboratory for a race, probably an engineered race by the extraterrestrials or by the cosmic visitors. Another thing, after Göbekli Tepe civilization moved to Edessa, they covered the structures with the sand because they were under the sand, hidden many, many thousands of years. And after that, the same civilization moved to Edessa. And they started a teaching, an esoteric teaching. That's very important because they had several books. One of them is Picatrix. In 15th century, Italian Medici family found that book, got it translated in Constantinople. And after that, based on the teachings in that book, especially in Europe, some organizations, some brotherhoods, such as Rose-Croix, which is Amorque in the United States, started their teachings. So based on the Amorque teachings and Rose-Croix teachings are coming from Göbekli Tepe.
Well, that makes sense because that whole area was probably at least one of the starts of creation. And you know, when you were talking about the laboratory, it got me thinking because when you look at humans today, when I was doing a blood type study, I was talking to a couple of doctors about this, and humans have a lot of junk DNA, way more than they should for a race that wasn't engineered. I've actually heard geneticists compare us to Dolly the sheep, because Dolly the sheep had a lot of extra junk DNA and other stuff in its system that was made was a side effect from the creation, you know, growing a sheep in a petri dish, basically. So it does seem like that's probably what was going on. They may have been, you know, whoever came here first, whatever race it was that came here first, probably found some ape-like species running around, and they took it. And they probably introduced their DNA into it. And then and from the stories of what the hell's the name of them? No, it's going to go right out of my hand. Oh, the first written race, the Sumerians, they talk about... The Sumerians talk about a godlike race that came here and built these great white dome cities in the desert, no less, and started creating what they call the seven creations of man, with the last one being close to us, but not actually being us. I mean, they look like us, a little bit shorter, maybe a little stockier. And they could do things like procreate, plow the field, make beer, do what they needed to do to help whatever these aliens were doing. But then if you go back to the Dogon, they talk about a reptilian race that came and interfered with the Sumerian race as slaves and interbred with them. And we all know we have a reptilian section in our brain. It's part of who and what everybody on the planet is. And we all have that reptilian section. So they said they bred with them, and they said the children were born were different. At first, I thought they meant they looked different, but that's not what they meant. They acted different. They became much more aggressive. They ran off the aliens, and they took back their society. And so that was probably the original start of the race that's here today. But since even then, the greys, reptilians, and humans have done so much genetic playing around that I doubt we're even that close to the original race. The race that's here today is probably different than the race we were just talking about.
Yeah.
So, and it seems like we're growing and expanding. And I can understand the greys, reptilians, and humans wanting to make sure that we're going to be a passive and not an, because right now we're a very aggressive species. It doesn't matter what country you live in, you know, we're just aggressive. And for us to go out into deep space with spacecraft and big bombs, planet busters, is not a safe thing. So I think they're scared that one day we might catch up with the light beams. We're talking 500 million, a billion years, but still, today as a species, since we have all three of their bloods in us, we may actually achieve that. And I think that worries them because somewhere along the line, the children are going to pass the masters. And when that happens, they better hope we're friendly and not aggressive, because we might take a disposition to being abducted all them years and decide to wipe somebody out. So I think in a lot of ways, it's their best interest to make sure that we evolve a little different. But then when you look around at the planet, you got to stop and wonder, why aren't you interfering? I mean, if they were here to enlighten our species, they've done a bad job of it. And of course, if they were here to wipe out our species, they've blown that completely, because there's almost 8 billion of us. So you got to wonder. It's we know that they're more than just sitting there watching, because we know they've interfered, because we know about contactees and abductees. But it seems like they'll only go so far and then stop. So it's okay to interfere to a point, and then they stop, and I don't understand why. I mean, if you're going to interfere with us now, why not go all the way and educate? I mean, could you imagine if tomorrow morning a group of aliens landed wherever So here, we're coming here to educate y'all, unite your planet, show you how a civilization that's going to be spacefaring should be. But they don't do that. They're like, and part of me thinks, oh, well, they want to see if we're going to wipe ourselves out. Because, I mean, for them, they can clean the planet up in no time at
no,
all.
No, no, they need us. They
want us. They want us for whatever reason. I mean, I know a lot of their agendas is about them, not about us. But there's something about us that either they feel like we're family and they don't want to wipe us out, or there's something in our DNA that's going to be useful. It could be a combination of things.
They need us. Definitely.
You know, so something's in there. But I know, we almost out of time, girl. That was fast. Lord have mercy. Books, places you're going to be. Tell everybody where they can find you, how they can get hold of you. I didn't realize we were running out of time that fast. I'm so used to 2 hours that an hour is like,
yeah, it was fast. So thank you very much for having me on your show. And we are waiting for you to join us to one of our cultural
trips.
Oh,
I'd love to be over there.
To Quebec, to Tepe. Yes.
You probably have to tie me down and give me give me a bodyguard. I'd be getting in all kind of trouble going places I shouldn't be going.
No, don't worry.
I'd be like, Farrah, what the hell is that? And then the bad part is I'd get sidetracked because I'd be looking for alien stuff, and then I'd be seeing history stuff going, what the hell is that? What the hell does that sound like? I'd be like a kid in a candy store.
You cannot accept two of them. Believe me.
No,
two of them are going together, history and extraterrestrial stuff.
I agree 100%. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I say that every time I say that publicly, people look at me like I'm crazy. But when you go back and you look at the history, at least the history that we can still see, there's no doubt they've been here as long as we've been here. And they've
some
been messing around.
Are not man-made. Some of the things are not man-made.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And I think some of the races that originally came here probably don't come back anymore, because it does seem to be talk of races that we don't hear about today. So I wonder if, you know, they were here in the beginning and then decided, well, you know what, humans are crazy. We're not going back for a while.
Okay, so thank you very much, Joe. It was a pleasure being with you, hearing your voice, and I hope to get together soon with you.
I will write to you either tonight or tomorrow and give you a couple of dates to, you know, let you choose which one will be best for you, and then you can just tell me. Because like I said, we got the end of April and all of May, so you can any way you feel comfortable in there. I apologize again for cutting us an hour out.
No problem.
It makes
me
crazy. Oh, no, I've been looking forward to talking to you. I've been telling everybody for weeks. I said, man, I ain't talked to Farrah in forever. I want to talk to her. And because you're always interesting. You always got a lot of good stuff to say. And I know you're always working a lot of good projects. Well, because you work, you know, whereas a lot of ufologists, how can I say this politely, are more worried about their ego and what's going to keep them in the limelight than they are about finding the truth, and which aggravates me. But hey, it's all about the truth. I want to know what's going on. I legitimately, you know, before I croak over and cross over to wherever I'm going, I would like to have some idea of what all this is about. Because, like, again, I don't think they're here to kill us. So
yeah.
I think they have a long-term agenda.
They are intelligent. They are intelligent. They wouldn't kill us.
And I think their agenda is going to take several million years to play out, but which is, you know, kind of hard on people like you and I, unless they're going to give me a shot and let me live another million years or so. But, you know, that's something else we found out recently. They tend to – some of these people tend to get taken and not brought back right at the moment of death, though. Which I found interesting. But I know we ain't got enough time to get into that. But I'm going to let you get out of here, guys and girls. Y'all can find Farrah. Her information is up on the UFO on the cover page. I'm going to leave it up all week. I will put her contact where you can get in touch with her as well. So if you need to talk to her about something, you can. I'll get an email up there for y'all as well. And if you're in the area, people, Farrah is very approachable. You can talk to her. I mean, don't be a dummy, but be polite. But, you know, I know a lot. We have a big audience in the Middle East. I'm amazed. Like right now, there is 2,800 people listening to us in Iran. You know, it just amazes me in some of the countries that you wouldn't even think they would listen to an American that we have. Oh, no, Chris, we're in every country in the world now. There's not a country. This show goes to every country in the world and 450 American cities. Yeah, we're everywhere. It just amazes me to go see stuff like Saudi Arabia, 5,000 people listening. I'm like, really? I said, I didn't think China. I mean, we're in, 18 cities in China. And for everybody listening to China, I hope y'all are having, you know, working out that coronavirus, people. I know it's rough.
Yeah.
And y'all, you know, but don't take this the wrong way. Keep it in China, people. We don't want it in our country. But I know we got to get out of here. Farrah, again, you were fabulous.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And And I'll hit you up with an email later today so we can get it all set up. And again, I want to apologize for cutting you now. I can't believe I did that.
No problem.
Guys, no problem. Coming up next, The Outer Realm with Michelle and Amelia Pisanio. So it should be great. Their guest is Jeff Mudgett. So y'all be sure to chain in. They'll be in about 4 minutes. So, Farrah, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, everybody. And I'll see y'all next week. Oh, and what did you ask me? Who was next week's guest? Dr. Rita Lewis is on next week. Yeah. So y'all be sure to come by and check that out. Again, thanks, Farrah. I had a great time, even though it felt like two minutes.
Thanks to you. Bye-bye. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Have a nice day.
For monumental savings, pick Patpec Honda. Shop our incredible selection with over 1,100 new Hondas available. Pick a new 2020 Accord Sedan LX CVT. Lease for just $249 a month. 36 months, zero security deposit. Pick Patpec Honda today. Visit us at 11151 US 49 in Gulfport or shop online anytime at patpechonda.com. Stock number LA052085-1, 12,000 miles per year. 2099 down payment, tax and fees extra. Unapproved credit through HFSC dealer for details. N3220. Pick Patpec Nissan for your next vehicle. Shop over 500 new Nissans at the only Nissan dealer in Gulfport. Right now, buy a new 2020 Rogue S for $24,074. Visit us on US 49 in Gulfport and drive home your new Nissan today. Shop our complete inventory online at patpecnissan.com. VIN LC724100, MSRP 28,180. Includes 1606 dealer discount and 2,500 Nissan customer cash. Tax, title, and fees extra. See dealer for details. N3220.